Here we go. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Good Saturday morning to you, my early rising friend. Welcome home. I'm Dean Sharp, the house whisperer, custom home builder, custom home designer. Yeah, that's me. Here for you as an advocate, a mentor, and your friend as you take on the noble work of turning your ordinary house into an extraordinary home. Tina just showed me. Tina, you should go visit my wife's Facebook page right now, only to find that she has changed her profile pic. It's her and me, the normal pic, but there's somebody in the background. Who's in the background there, Tina?
You know.
Is there a Bernie Sanders sitting behind us in our house?
He's just chilling out.
Just chilling out with his mittens on. All right, yeah. She's given in. She's given in to the Bernie meme. Anyway, the team is all here. Hey, Layla Mohammed is here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you guys doing?
We are well. We're staying warm.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's going to be 50s and a little bit of 60s throughout the weekend. Scattered showers, 50s most of next week. So stay warm.
You know what? It's okay. It's winter.
It is. I keep forgetting.
it's okay. It's okay. I know it's easy to forget. You're like, hey, I thought spring had already started.
I know.
Now it's just Southern California life. All right. Well, the team is here. Tina and Bernie and his mittens are here. So why don't we get into it today? We had an incident, speaking of weather, this week. Many of you experienced this. We had like 3 days of sustained winds, high gusting sustained winds this last week. And for some of us, those winds translated into power outages. And for us, for Tina and I, out here in the Thousand Oaks Westlake area, that power outage wasn't just, oh, power's down for a couple hours. We were without power for over 24 hours. It was a day plus, which for us is not a big deal, okay? I just want to be clear about that. We're not snowflakey when it comes to that kind of stuff. Tina and I really don't care. We kind of looked at each other and went, oh, it's time to make a puzzle. Now it did shut down a little bit of work, but fortunately for us, we had already cleared the decks for Wednesday because we wanted to just hang out at home and watch all of the inaugural festivities. And so the only thing that got under my skin was the fact that not only was the power down, but internet was down for us too. And it meant it was going to, and cell service in the area was greatly reduced because several cell towers were out. And it was going to mean that we were going to be not threatened or, but just inconvenienced. And so I was looking for alternatives as of Tuesday night to figure out how it was going to be possible for us to end up watching the inauguration, which we did, by the way. But what it did is it that and another reason for going shopping led us over to the Home Depot on Tuesday afternoon. And what I saw there was nothing short of revelatory to me. It was eye-opening. There were generators literally flying off the shelves. One of the Home Depot employees told me that they had already sold that day 47 of these, you know, $800, $900 generators. And there was a queue. There was a line of about six or seven people waiting for the ones that they were bringing down from the shelving up above. And, of course, every rental yard within a 20-mile radius had rented out all of their generators. And so it was one of those things. And it reminded me, because as I was standing there and I was checking out, I wanted to see, there was one of the generators sitting there, and I wanted to see what exactly the features were on this particular generator that people were just snatching up. It was an $850 generator. Pretty powerful generator, relatively powerful, I think 6,500 watt generator. I'll get into that later this morning and explain to you what that kind of stuff means. But I was staring at it. I was thinking, wow, this is a job site generator. This is the kind of generator that we have on hand that we will use on a what we would call a primitive job site where we're about to build a house, but there's nothing there. There may be no utilities. We may not even have a temporary power pole set up yet. And so we're running power off of a generator. They're big, they're bulky, they're heavy as heck, and they were just flying off the shelves. And it all really congealed to me when one guy who felt a little chatty and had a lot of questions looked at me and said, "Hey, you know anything about these generators?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Do they come with their own hoses?" And I thought, "Oh no." Hoses, no, extension cords, and no, you have to buy your own extension cords. And then another guy said, you can plug these into your electrical panel and everything will be fine. And I thought, no. And so what I realized was, the main thing I realized was, number one, it wasn't a good day to be at Home Depot. Number two, we've come 4 years into the show and I have never done a program on emergency power, backup power for the house. And, you know, at a moment of crisis, the moment of crisis is the time to launch your plan, not make your plan. And so today, I'm going to help you figure out how to make the plan before the next outage comes. And they are coming more and more frequently, aren't they? Because Edison, as a perfect example, and PG&E, they are getting tired of being responsible for every wildfire on the West Coast. And so what are they doing? They're gun shy. And so when wind events and fire events kick up, which they always do, they're just shutting down whole swaths of communities as a preventative measure. And that leaves you and me in the dark. How are we going to deal with that? We'll talk about that when we return. That's today's show. I'm so glad you joined me this morning. So much more to come. You're listening to Home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer. KFI, Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer, forever occupying that space between the world as it is and the world as it should be. The world as it should be. A world in which every social media photo has Bernie Sanders in the background with his mittens. You are listening to Home, where every week we help you better understand that place where you live. Hey, we are also going to talk to you today, in addition to me talking to you about emergency backup power. I want to hear about what's going on with your home and get your questions. So coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to go to the phones. The lines are, I believe, open right now. So now's your chance to jump into the queue. The number to reach me at, 833-2-ASK-DEAN. 833, the number 2-ASK-DEAN. Give me a call. Jump into the queue. You can listen to the show while you're on hold, and then we will talk, and I'll try and help you out with whatever's going on with your home. Be it a construction issue or a DIY concern or a design question, some of my favorite questions. Why would that be? Because I'm a home designer. So we will work that out, and that's coming up in just a few. All right. Generators and solar backup batteries are very important safety equipment during natural disasters, not just because of what I was saying before the break, which is the inconvenience of not being able to check on something that's going on TV or something as simple as that, although emergency broadcasts are important in real emergencies, but they can also be life-threatening situations, these blackouts, because some people have medical equipment that has to stay on. Some people have medications that, you know, we're all now familiar with, like the COVID vaccine has to be refrigerated at a certain temperature. Well, not to that degree, but there are medications that are go bad if they are not kept under refrigeration. So there are many, many reasons why backup power is important to a household. And having a home generator allows you to keep the lights on and important appliances and essential medical equipment. So here is the tough part of our conversation today. I can't tell you which is the right system for you to get, because there is no right emergency power source. There's only the right one for you. Okay? So what that means is that we've got to do the work today. We have got to figure out what the principles are. We need to learn the principles of emergency backup power so that you can make an informed choice. Do your research and make an informed choice of how it's going to best fit into your home, your budget, and so on. No matter what system you go with, you're going to need to know at least three essential things. So this is just the ones that we're going to hit right off the bat, and then you're going to see us returning to these in every category. So here we go. Number one, you need to understand that all of this is based on wattage. Wattage is the way that we measure power consumption, okay? Power consumption, how much electricity a given appliance or device consumes in order for it to operate, okay? Wattage, not voltage. Voltage is a nationally recognized standard for the kind of electricity that's coming into your house. We are all sitting in homes in North America with 120-volt electrical service coming into our home, okay? So it's not amperage. That's a whole nother thing. It's not voltage, but wattage is how we measure. So, for instance, a 1,000-watt microwave, which is often referred to in that way, is a microwave that consumes 1,000 watts of power as it operates. A 1,500-watt hairdryer, and so on. You know, we're used to some wattages, as I just mentioned, get put in the actual branding of an appliance or a device. But every device has a wattage. Now, you can usually find this by picking up the appliance and turning it over and looking at that label on the bottom side. You can find out how many watts your toaster sucks up. You can find out how many watts your coffee maker sucks up. Wattage is the key, and adding up the wattages of the things that you want to operate simultaneously. This is the key word, simultaneously. Any generator of any size of significance can run just about any appliance, a small appliance, not your electric oven, not your air conditioner, but small appliance throughout your house, one at a time. Okay? So just about any generator will run any of those appliances one at a time. But you may not want to be making coffee in the dark, so you may want to have a power feed to the water heater so that the tankless water heater is actually producing hot water, and having the microwave running, and having a light on in the kitchen, and the coffee maker up and running, along with the radio and the TV at the same time during an emergency. So the key is adding up the wattages of those things that you would prefer to have running simultaneously. And then that's our first clue in deciding what kind of generator or backup battery system we need to know about. Now, after that comes two other things: sound and choice of fuel. And I'm going to get into that when we return. We're going to hang on to calls just for a bit, because we're going to get through this basic list first. So much more to come. You're home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer.
I know supposedly I'm lonely now. No, I'm supposed to be unhappy without someone. But aren't I someone?
KFI, AM 640. Live everywhere in the iHeartRadio app. You are home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer. We're talking about emergency power today, and I would normally go right to the phones at this segment. I'm just going to delay that one segment with you because I want to get through the preliminary list and dive a little bit deeper into what you need to know in order to set up the best possible emergency power situation for you. Like I said in the last segment, there is no one right answer to this question. There is only the right one for you. And that's why, based on my experience at Home Depot this last Tuesday, looking at scattered shoppers totally confused and having no idea what even to do with the generator that they were buying or whether they were buying the right one. It just struck me that I haven't spoken with you about this before, not in this level of detail, and it's important. So, and I think we just heard a news story, right, where people are complaining about the way that Edison and PG&E are just shutting down the lines anytime they're running gun shy, anytime there's any risk whatsoever. Appropriate, by the way, that was that the mayor of Simi Valley that we heard? Someone from Simi Valley. It's appropriate that he's complaining because he's absolutely right. There are gusty winds in Simi Valley all the time.
Yes, that was the mayor of Simi Valley. Yes,
the mayor. It was the mayor of Simi. Yeah.
Mayor Keith Simi. Mashburn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Simi, S-I-M-I, is the Chumash Indian word for wind. Simi Valley is literally Windy Valley. And so for them especially, it feels completely arbitrary. For, you know, when does the power get shut down now? Well, when the winds are above 30, that's like just a Tuesday for us out here. So anyway, it's happening more and more and more, and you are going to be more and more inconvenienced. And the power companies are certainly not doing a good job of notifying us. Now, we got notification all weekend long that we might be in a intentional shutdown zone. You might be. We might shut your power down. We might. But you know what? What we weren't told in any of the notifications, we weren't told that if we shut your power down, we're planning on doing it for up to 3 days. Only after the power went out, did Tina go on to the Edison website and found that in our zone, the power was, yes, we intentionally shut you down, and may be restored by, this was Tuesday, may be restored by Thursday at noon. There was no notification whatsoever. So anyway, all of that to say, it's a good idea to have a plan. So, the three things we need to know, the three essentials that we need to know in order to begin the conversation, as I said before the break, add up the wattages of the devices that you need or want to have running simultaneously, okay? Any generator can handle one at a time, but simultaneously, that's when it adds up. That helps you get a sense of the kind of power output you need your generator to have. Number two, and this is a tricky one, you've got to consider sound, okay? Sound is measured in units called decibels, dB. The higher the decibel level, the louder the noise, okay? You need to know this. It works a lot like earthquakes. The decibel scale, the increase in the decibel scale, it means that for every increase of 10 is a sound that is actually 10 times more intense, okay? So you think, oh, well, 65 decibels, and that's what this generator says. And this one over here that's way less expensive says 75. Well, it's only 10 decibels louder than this one, and it's like $500 less expensive. So we'll just get this one. Well, you just need to know. The difference of 65 decibels and 75 decibels is 10 times as loud. Okay? Not just a fraction. No. 65 to 75, 10 times as loud. And so every click on the decibel scale matters a lot. And here is where it really becomes an issue. Larger generators can be really loud, and most communities, almost, I would guarantee the community you live in, unless you were off in a rural area, most communities have noise ordinances, and most in Southern California of those ordinances hover around 65 decibels during the day and 55 at night after a certain time in the evening, 7 or 8 o'clock, sometimes 9 o'clock at night. Around here, I think it's 9 o'clock. There's a cutoff where there has to be a 10 decibel drop after 9 p.m. until 7 in the morning, okay? So what does that mean? It means that you can be cited, and those citations can be $500, for a noise nuisance issue if you are making noise louder than that. Well, a 75 decibel generator running in the middle of the night is going to keep your neighbors up if your neighbors are anywhere nearby. And by the way, most of the noise ordinances are measured at the property boundary, not the front yard, not the sidewalk. And you say, well, I'll just put my generator in the backyard. No, it's also your side property boundaries as well. So if your generator is sitting in your side yard of your house, and your side yard's only 5 feet, okay? So technically the noise of your generator gets measured at the property line between you and your neighbor, right? So sound is an issue that you really need to be aware of when you are purchasing a generator. They are all labeled with a decibel rating. Some of the big ones, though, you have to search for, because they're not selling that generator based on its noise. They're selling it based on its power outage, its power output. But you can get that info on all of them. But sound is an issue. So it may sound great to have a 10,000-watt generator running in your yard because, you know, my whole house can run as if it was just no power outage at all. Well, that's fine. But you're going to get a citation for disturbing the peace. That's just the way it works. The final thing is you have to choose your fuel source for your generator. And there are basically three available to you. There is, number one, gasoline. Fill up a generator tank with gasoline, and there it goes. The second one these days is propane, where you can run generators off of, those propane tanks that you would run your barbecue grill off of. And the third is natural gas, hooking a generator directly into your natural gas line. They all have advantages. They all have disadvantages, you can imagine. But choosing the fuel type, and there are some generators that are dual fuel, and that's great too, but choosing your fuel type is an important part of making that generator selection. All right, there we go. Had to get that out. That gets us ready for the next set of issues, which is what kind of generators and backup batteries are out there. We will do that when we return to the subject, but up next, your calls. You're home with Dean Sharp. KFI, Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer, welcome home. We're talking about preparing for emergency power outages by having emergency backup power ready. It's a very complex subject. It's one that we haven't delved into specifically before, and we're going to get back to it in just a few minutes. But first, let us go to the phones, shall we? Let's talk to Bill. Hey, Bill. Welcome home.
Hey, good morning, Dean. How you doing?
Good, good.
Okay, I have a question for you here. We had a barbecue last week, and I didn't notice that the drip bucket didn't catch the grease. And so I went out there this morning, and I noticed there was a big puddle of grease on my concrete. I'm looking for a way to get that grease up, and hopefully get it removed with no stain on the concrete there.
Gotcha. Well, here's the thing. If you go on to the interweb, you are going to find all sorts of homemade remedies of how to get grease and oil out of concrete. So let me just suggest that you don't do that. Forget about that, because I'm guessing that you actually want it to work and you don't want to be out there on your hands and knees for hours on end with a scrub brush. So there are things that you're going to hear like covered in baking soda and come back 3 hours later and then get a stiff bristle brush and, you know, that kind of stuff. Here are my two suggestions. These are our go-tos in the world of building, which we deal with this stuff all the time. There are two products out there that I recommend strongly. One is TSP, trisodium phosphate. TSP is an odorless white powder. It comes in a little box. It has a shelf life of a gabillion years. You add it to hot water. And you're going to pour that and scrub it into the grease area, and you should see it actually start to resolve and come up almost immediately, unless it's really, really down in there. Okay, so most of the time, some TSP and a stiff bristle brush is going to get it done. Now, yeah, there's a little elbow grease. You do need a stiff bristle brush and warm water, but we're not talking about hours on end, and you should be able to resolve it real quickly. However, if that doesn't work, I have another go-to that actually, you know, performs as advertised. You can probably find this, I think, at a place like Home Depot or Lowe's or, you know, Ace Hardware, wherever. Goof Off, the company, the brand name Goof Off, who has specialized in a lot of cleaning solvents. They specifically make a concrete cleaning solution that is specifically advertised to first time, get grease and oil out of concrete. And let me tell you, it actually works. But I'm going to give you this caveat with the Goof Off. It is the nuclear option. It's not going to damage your concrete or anything like that. You don't have to worry about that. But here's the risk. The risk you run with the Goof Off is that it works so well that you might actually leave behind a clean spot on your concrete. Meaning, it not only removes the oil and the grease, but it leaves that patch of concrete cleaner than all the concrete around it. And so the very first time we ever used it, we were so impressed that it pulled this grease out of a client's patio. We were so thrilled. We're like, wow, we just wiped off our hands. Job well done, and walked away. Got a call the next day from the client saying, the spot is back. I'm like, what? The spot can't be back. We got all the grease out of there. Oh, you got to come over. There's a spot here now. Well, we went back, and sure enough, it wasn't a grease spot. It was a clean spot. And we basically had to use a little more goo, a diluted version of the Goof Off, and kind of spread it around the spot where we had cleaned and blend it out and kind of feather it out so that you couldn't notice as distinctly the fact that that part of the concrete was really clean. So anyway, that's my that's my 2 cents on that. But either TSP, which is a really powerful cleaning detergent, or the Goof Off stuff. Either way, just be aware that you know, you can go a little overboard with it. But
my grass around my concrete, or
what was that? I'm sorry.
Now, will any of those hurt my grass around the concrete area when I wash it off, or is that something I need to keep contained?
Yeah, you should keep it contained. You should keep it contained, especially the Goof Off, because it's a straight-up solvent. The TSP is not going to be so toxic to the grass. In fact, TSP, just so you know, is found in many processed foods. So it's not going to be as dangerous to the grass, but the Goof Off, for sure, that's a straight-up solvent, and you know, it'll kill any organic thing it runs into. Bill, thanks so much for the call. I hope it enabled us to give a little concrete cleaning clinic for everybody. And good luck with that, buddy.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Okay, All right, everybody, back to emergency power outages when we return. I'm so glad you joined me this morning. So much more to come. You're home with Dean Sharp, the House Whisperer on KFI.